Good to see Stella here, although Stella told me the last time I think I spoke that I gave too many history sermons because I had done two in a row. So I'm not allowed to give a history sermon today, so I won't. And this is one that I've done a few times. I enjoy it because of the verses that are used in it. It's more of an encouraging sermon. But if you've heard it and you blame someone, blame Clark Earls. He said, oh, I wish he'd do that again. So I thought I would, and guess what? No Clark today. So the way it is. Well, 50 years ago, my family, it was right around 50 years ago, a couple of ministers from Worldwide Church of God went to visit my mother and father. I was just a little baby. They came out to the farm. Mom and Dad had been reading The Plain Truth for a few years and talked to Mom and Dad for a while and told them, no, you're not ready to come into church yet. I think they came twice, didn't they? A couple of times. And I think Mom and Dad were, well, why not? Well, they didn't realize they had like 8,000 or 9,000 pigs on the farm, so not exactly what the church was looking for at the time. But once they visited again, they eventually said, okay, I think you're ready. The pigs were long gone by then, so they started that. But before that, my parents knew that there was going to be a Feast of Tabernacles, a holy day season that they keep, and we kept it in Gatlinburg, which was not a feast site for church at that time. But again, this year we're taking Mom again. So it just reminds me of looking back, that's 50 years ago. 50 years of this same reminder. And what this fall season represents is the end of this journey. The end of this journey that we're all on. So today I just want to look at why we do this, what our end goal is, and when will it end? Because we've thought we've known it in the past, and we actually have no idea. But let's look at what the Bible says about this journey that we're on. Let's go to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, verse 1 says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Again, many people have been here 20, 30, 40, 50 years, some people 1 year. But it's the same race for all of us. It's the same race. Many that we know, think about the last 10 years, the people who in this congregation, their race is over. They ran their race. And that's hard sometimes, but their race is over. They don't have to worry about what the McGowans have to worry about, what people have to worry about in this world. Their race is over. They've ran that race. And yes, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to lose a father, but in the wrong way, hey, their race is over. I know everyone in here that's lost a husband or wife, it's terrible, but they ran the race. The race is over. But today, I just want to look at 7 points that enable us to run this endurance race, because it's not the easiest race in the world, but 7 points. As we continue this race, as we continue it till we don't know when, but let's look at those 7 points. Point number one, this is not a sprint. Point number one, this is not a sprint. One of the most amazing things in the Olympics is actually watching the 100-meter run to see the world's fastest people, how fast they run. It's unbelievable that humans can run that fast, but it's a little less than 10 seconds and it's over. 10-second run and it's over. Again, it's fun to watch, but it's not a long race. This is not the race that we're in. Let's look at Hebrews 10. Just jump over a couple of pages. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Hebrews 10, verse 36 says, "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise." Just think of all the people that we've known that have attended church with us throughout the years. Where are they? Where are they? Most of them dropped out of this race. Remember fee sites? I know anyone that's been around since Worldwide Days, there were fee sites where there were 15,000 people there. And we can't get that in all the little splinter churches combined. But those people didn't see this as an endurance race. People treated it like a sprint. And again, there were people saying, oh, this is going to be the end time. This is going to, no one knows that. So we needed to continue and realize that this is not a sprint. We don't know the end time. Again, I've mentioned this several times. We were always told we'd never get married. Now I'm announcing our second grandchild because we thought the end time would be there. But we find out it's not a sprint. It's a very long race. Think about people who have come into the church. Man, they're just completely gung-ho. You're almost embarrassed that someone's that excited. But they go all in, and then they just kind of fade away. They go so much into it that they just drift away because they forget it's not a 10-second race. It is. It's our endurance race. Again, it's not a marathon because we don't know how long the distance is. But people disappear. They come in and they disappear, but we're all sitting here right now because we're still running this race. Second point, a long race requires sustenance. A long race requires sustenance. I told the story of my wife running a sprint marathon and triathlon. And because she doesn't like to eat enough when it got to the end of the race, she was pretty well wiped out. I mean, she finished, of course, but not the way she wanted. Chris and I talked last week. I think you said Chelsea one time struggled right at the end because didn't quite have enough calories. Calories are just energy. If you don't have those, you're not going to be able to at least perform the way you want to in the race. You have to have that. The Ironman triathlons. Hey, we're finally getting rain. Well, the Ironman triathlons consist of 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then you finish with the 26.2-mile marathon. They expend 8,000 to 10,000 calories during this race. That's staggering considering most people use 1,500 to 2,000, 2,500 calories a day. So you have to replace this during the race. You have to replace these during the race, otherwise you cannot finish. You cannot finish the race. It's the same way with us. Can we come here, spend our 2 hours here once a week, and that's all the spiritual food we have? We cannot do that any more than someone running a triathlon can just say, no, I don't need any food while I'm doing this. I'm good. We cannot do it. Let's look at John 6 for this. John 6. John 6, verse 51 says, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. Just like physical food, we have to have this every day. We have to have it every day to sustain ourselves. Otherwise, we're not in this spiritual race. We're not in it. We've stopped when we do this because we have to have that. We have to have those calories, I guess you'd say. Matthew 4:4 says, we don't even have to go there. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That's our spiritual food. We need it every day. Second one, we need sustenance. We need the food. The third point is we need to train for a distance run. We need to train for a distance run. There used to be a race in Colorado up in the mountains, and they would allow people to sign up. They would have no idea where the finish line was, and these ultra runners would run this race. No idea how far. It could be a mile. It could be 150, 200-mile distance. It got to the point where people were actually cheating and finding out, and they had to discontinue the race. That's kind of where we are. We know there's an end to this race, but as we've seen people predict, oh, this is the end time, the end time's coming here, we realize it's not the case. So we need to train for distance where we can run and run and run, like Forrest Gump, run, Forrest. We just continue to run and run and run this race. 1 Corinthians 9, let's go there. 1 Corinthians 9. First Corinthians 9, verses 26 and 27. And Paul, Paul says, therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. Someone that's going to run a marathon can't just wake up and say, oh, I think I'll run one next weekend. You've got to train for usually months to do well in a race like this. Anyone know how the marathon got its name? Anyone know? You know how? The soldier and all that stuff. The Athenian army was fighting, and they were fighting in the plain of Marathon. It's about 26 miles north of Athens. According to the legend, the Athenians then ordered the messenger, and I may mispronounce his name, but Pheidippides, to run ahead to Athens and announce the victory to the city. He ran the race. It was very hot. He ran it in intense heat. Upon reaching it, he exclaimed, Nike, of course, that's where we get the Nike athletic wear, which means victory or rejoice we conquer. And then he collapsed dead from exhaustion. Now, whether that's true or not, some people say it's just it's a legend. But either way, this was someone who gave it all, but he knew that end point, and he finished his race. So even though we don't know the end point, we do know this is a long run, and we've got to put in the time, whether it's prayer, study, again, we'll see in a minute, being with each other, all of this, we have to train for that distance race. We have to be able to continue no matter what we're going to go. Which leads us to number four. Number four is it's not a flat race. This is not a flat race. This isn't a track that we just run on that's extremely flat. We've got hills all over this race. This time of year, it seems like everyone's facing some kind of hills because it seems like Satan's always in there right now. A track's a whole lot easier to run on than out on the road, but we don't have a physical track to run on. Let's look at Matthew 17. Matthew 17. I'm sorry, Matthew 7. I knew something wasn't right. Matthew 7, verse 14. We all know this verse because we've heard it a lot. Matthew 7, verse 14. It says, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. We're going to be tested a lot throughout this race of ours. We're going to be tested. I mean, God mentions tested by fire with the pottery and clay and all of those metaphors for what we're going through. We are tested like that. Imagine the most righteous man on earth was someone named Job. Now you think, okay, this guy has it all. And even God said he was the most righteous man. And yet look what he went through. Matter of fact, let's just look at not what he went through, but let's look at what he was almost promised by God. Job 1. Because this is absolutely frightening to think, if I'm doing everything right, this could happen to me. Job 1. Just going to read verses 7 through 11. God's actually talking to Satan here. It says, and the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord, and he said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it. Tells us right there that his race isn't going to be easy. Satan's right there with us. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? So Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he shall surely curse you to your face. As Mr. Perryman has said, he threw Job out there like a poker chip. This is what we'll face. Again, if the most righteous man at that time is going to be faced with that. And Paul talks about what he went through. This isn't an easy run that we have. This is not some little joyride. This is a very tough road. Again, narrow is the gate. We will be tested. Look at all the people with health problems right now that need our prayers everywhere. They need our prayers. God's going to test every one of us. Now, are there people that will walk away and quit the race? We see it all the time, unfortunately. We do. Look at point number five. Point number five is stay focused on the prize. Stay focused on the prize. The one thing about a race is for the overall prize, only one person wins that physical race. Only one person wins that physical race. But it's not true of the prize we're seeking. How many people can we remember again who lost sight of that prize? Some of them wanted money. Some of them just wanted to go do what they wanted. Forget the Sabbath, forget the things we believe. I went to SEP in Big Sandy in 1987. There were about 225 campers there. I was a camper that year. And during that session, at that time, almost everyone that had been there had been grown up in the church. It was, I won't say it was right, but most of the time you had to have been in church for quite a while to actually get to go to camp and spend that time. And again, most of us grew up in that church. And everyone enjoyed camp. It was great. But a few years ago, I talked to Sean Corlew, a minister that died earlier this year. He was there. And Mr. Keller's daughter, Melissa, was there. And we started figuring out, and all we could figure out, even in the other churches that we knew of, was out of those 225, only six of us that we knew, there may be a few more, but only six of us remained out of that group. Every single one of them lost sight of the prize. Now, can they come back? Can you finish the race? Absolutely. But when times become difficult, I'm not sure that they're going to remember. I hope so. You hope that they do. Hopefully people will remember when you see the whole world falling apart. But if you don't stay focused on the prize, you're never coming back to that because you've got other prizes. You have other goals that you're looking for at that time. Point number six, it's easier to run with others. It's much easier to run with other people. Yeah, some people may enjoy running by themselves, but as far as actually performing, it's better with people because people push each other. People push each other. And Brandon mentioned that. We need to be here to exhort one another. Let's look at Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10. There's a man that lives here locally. Eric's not here today, I guess, but Eric's a good friend of his. Well, you would know him also. I won't mention his name here, but he went to Worldwide's headquarters, I guess, back then. He worked there. Then he went with Dr. Meredith's group, worked at their headquarters, and worked somewhere else. Went somewhere else also, worked in their offices, and he became so disillusioned by seeing, which let's admit that all churches have this, these power struggles in there, that he just said, I'm just going to do it on my own at home. But every time, and I see him every 3 or 4 years, every time I see him, he's further and further away from it. He's gotten pretty well where he's just given it up. We have to have one another. Hebrews 10, verse 25. Says, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Because we see it approaching. And I think the idea of us going to each other's houses, that's a great idea because we are getting together. We have to be more closely bonded, more knitted as a family. If we are in trouble at the end time, don't we want somebody there with us? I know we're going to need each other at that time. I don't know who likes to fish in here, but if you fish, there are a couple of types of line. There's a monofilament line, which is just a single, I don't know that it's a fiber, but a single strand line. And then there's a braided line. And the braided line are several different strands that are woven together like a rope. And if you look at the two, they have test limits on each type of fishing line. The single line, it's a bigger diameter to have the same weight, the weight limit on it. The strands that are woven together, it's a much smaller diameter, but it's stronger. Even that smaller diameter line is stronger than the other. I have to do it together. I don't know if you've ever heard the story of the two mules that's at one of the state fairs, that they competed against each other for which one could pull the biggest weight behind the sled that they had. And they competed and competed, and finally one beat the other by just a little bit. So they decided to put the two mules together and see how much they could actually pull. You would think, okay, right around that limit times two, but they ended up pulling 50% more than just that limit. The two of them together worked better. We have to work together. We have to be here for one another when we're going through, whether we're going through good things. You think you may not need it. Sometimes I think I don't need other people. But guess what? We do, whether we want to admit it or not. And if you don't need other people, there are other people that need you. Number 7 is we cannot stop to rest. We don't just step off this race and say, no, I'm good for a while. We don't step off the race. Where is it? Back in the 80s and 90s, Australia hosted an endurance race. An endurance race from Sydney to Melbourne. That's a very long ways, 544 miles. So think of here to Panama City, all right, a race like that. It's considered at the time, they don't have it anymore, but one of the world's longest and toughest ultra marathons. And this was something that was kind of new at the time. So there weren't a whole lot of people in it, but there were some people doing it. It takes about a week, and at that time, you would have the world-class athletes. They would have a team that would help them with transitions, with their food and all that. But they trained for it, and they would have sponsors. And they mentioned sponsors like Adidas. I don't think Nike was involved in this, but other athletic apparel companies. They were all involved. But in 1983, these top runners were kind of in for a surprise. They're all there getting their numbers together, getting registered for the race. And here comes this guy named Cliff Young. And now no one paid any attention to him because he's sitting there. He's got bibbed overalls on. He's got his work boots. And he walks up to take a number. And they're like, wait a minute, this has to be a joke. But it became obvious that he's registering to win the race. He's going to join about 150 of these world-class athletes who are usually late 20s to mid-30s, late 30s, and he's 61 years old. He walks up, and they find out that, yes, he does have a team. He has his 81-year-old mother that's going to help him along the track. So he has her. Now, the reporters thought this was just some kind of publicity stunt. Okay, this guy's just going to get on TV, get his 10 minutes of fame, and go away. But they went over and interviewed him, and they asked, who are you and what are you doing? He said, I'm Cliff Young, and I'm from a large ranch where we run sheep outside of Melbourne. They said, you're really going to run the race? He said, yes. They said, do you have any supporters or backers? He said, no. They said, then you can't run. Well, Cliff said, yeah, I can. He said, see, I grew up where we couldn't afford horses. We couldn't afford three-wheelers. The whole time I was growing up, we had these rolling hills, and we had 2,000 head of sheep all over the side of the hills. Sometimes to get those sheep in when big storms were coming in, I'd have to run the sheep for 2 or 3 days straight. He said, it took a long time, but I'd catch them. I believe I can run the race. It's only 2 more days. He says, it's just 5 days. I've run sheep for 3. When the marathon starts, well, I would just say endurance race. I wouldn't call it a marathon. Of course, he gets left behind. These people know how to pace themselves, and they start running. And he just has this weird little shuffle that he goes along and takes his time. I forgot to mention that when the race started, he had to pull his teeth out because he had false teeth. And when he started running, they were rattling and causing his mouth to bleed. So he had to pull that out also. So just a little side note. But all over Australia, they're naturally keeping up with this because this is a big deal. But they start calling in to the local TV stations, people saying, please stop this guy. Said he's probably going to die on the side of the road. And it's not going to be worth it to watch this man die. Now, all of these athletes that were running this knew that it would take about 7 days to finish the race, and that in order to fully be able to do this each day, you needed to run about 18 hours and sleep for 6. The problem is Cliff Young had no idea about this. He didn't know this thought or process existed. When the morning news was aired the next morning, people were in for a big surprise. Cliff, he's still in the race, and he had jogged all night where they had all rested. He didn't stop the first day. Now, he's still behind because his pace is much slower, but he kept on running. He would wave at spectators. They would give him, you can see, excuse me, you could see on YouTube where they're stopping to give him glasses of milk, and he would drink along the way while he's doing this. But he continues to go, and when he got to a town called Owlbury, he was asked about his tactics for the rest of the race. He said, I'm going to run all the way through. Not going to stop, not going to rest. And he kept running. Every night, the pace started to slow because even the top athletes, they're tired. He gets a little bit closer every night. He gets a little bit closer. By the last night, he had passed all the world-class athletes. By the last day, he's way in front of them. Not only did he run the Melbourne to Sydney race at age 61 without dying, he won first place, breaking the record by 9 hours, and became a national hero. The nation fell in love with the 61-year-old potato farmer who came out of nowhere to defeat the world's best long-distance runners. He finished the 875-kilometer race in 5 days, 15 hours, and 4 minutes. Not knowing that he was supposed to sleep during the race, they asked him about it, and he said, well, I just imagined I was chasing sheep along the sides of the hills. He also, when they gave him an award, he didn't care about money or anything. He's a different type guy. But he said, no, I'll give that to the guys that finished second and third. So they had a little harder time than I did. So different type of guy. But it gives us that true tortoise and the hare story that we don't quit the race. We do not quit the race. Let's look at 2 Timothy 4. 2 Timothy 4. Verses 7 and 8. And once again, how many of us have family that can say this, have already been able to say this? But for each of us that are here, that are running this race, at the end of our time, how incredible would it be to be able to say this, 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, again, not only one person wins this race, not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. So as we come into the fall holy days, picturing the end of this race, just remember that we'll continue the race and we'll keep our eye on the prize.